You said there was one other to testify in Fairbanks?
Yes, sir. My name is Scott Calder. I reside in Fairbanks, Alaska. I agree with, I think, all of the reasons that have been given in support of this bill. I disagree with most, but not all, of the reasons which have been given against this bill. I think the discussion of this bill is obfuscating the central issue. I would not want to live in a world where women were forced to bear children, and yet the information that's presented about this bill, I think, is misleading. For example, a sponsor statement states that parental rights are uniquely disregarded in this instance. I assure you that parental rights are uniformly disregarded in almost every instance, and this is the only thing that makes this unique is that we have two sets of parents instead of just one. The insinuation that parents possessing medical information may be a reason for them to be involved completely avoids the issue of the parental moral values and other family considerations, which are primary to this decision-making process. The scientific and medico-technical aspects, I think, are secondary. The court authorization is constructed for potentially nothing except people just letting paperwork go by without acting on it. This is not court authorization. This is not judicial bypass. This is non-judicial bypass. 1816.030 would allow an allegation of maturity in an informed person, and also an abused person without any legal test of this information and without the knowledge of the accused person to be allowed to defend themselves, be presented with witnesses and so forth, and then to be held de facto as guilty of these things by virtue of the minor subsequent abortion. The discussion of the bill is misleading. Again, I agree with the reasons in support of it, but I don't think that the bill is accomplishing all that its proponents are asking you to accomplish, and I would encourage the committee and any others to do some more work on this. I'm being asked to wrap this up, if I could maybe have two more sentences. I think there's a significant thing that needs to be addressed here on the question of parental rights is the fact that this bill does nothing to curtail the rampant abuse of parental rights by the government of the state of Alaska, as reflected in the 1816.030B4, which allows for the, an untested allegation of abuse to be a reason for the minor to get an abortion. I think that it's ludicrous. I think it needs to be tightened up. Again, I agree with the reasons for it, but I don't think that it's strong enough. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Scott. Any question, Mr. Calder? Seeing none, that'll take us to Anchorage. Joelle Hall.
You have to leave. The next person on our list is Billy Tolan.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Billy Tolan. I'm with the Alaska Libertarian Party. I hold the position of nominations on the executive committee, also a past and future candidate for the state house. I'd like to state that the libertarian position on what goes on inside a person's body is that person's business, not a matter for government or other persons. Moral laws don't strengthen the family. Libertarians believe in self-ownership. You own yourself, you own your body, and the fruits of your labor. When you give others the power to dictate your most personal decisions regarding your own body, you devalue individual human life to the status of chattel property. The libertarian position opposes House Bill 37 and supports your choice, not another's. Also, I've heard that the Association of Unwashed Coat Hanger Artists strongly supports passage of House Bill 37. Thank you.
Thank you, Arthur. Yes, Representative James.
Yeah, I have a question. Now, what is this man's name?
This man's name is Toyin.
Toyin, Mr. Toyin, I have a question. When you state that we have individual responsibility for our behavior with no interference from the government, could you tell me at what age that begins for children?
shows individual responsibility and initiative, that is when it should happen. There should not be any arbitrary age lines drawn, such as 21 for cigarettes, 35 to run for president, etc. It varies with the individual. Draconian laws simply don't work. They simply rob people of their own personal growth.
Thank you. One more follow-up question then, that is, if this time for a child is when they show individual responsibility, do you suggest that a young teenager getting pregnant is a show of responsibility?
That person is responsible for her own actions. It's not something that can be farmed out to the government, to the police, to the school. It can't even be farmed out to other family members. If she has a healthy relationship with her family, she will seek guidance and counseling from her family. But it is not something that can be farmed out. It is something that needs to be dealt with, and a person needs to take responsibility.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if this same philosophy applies to children being irresponsible, and if then there would be no minimum age on the death penalty.
We have Lisa Fitzpatrick. Is she not there?
No, she did have to leave.
Okay.
The next person is here, Hugh Fletcher.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Hugh Fletcher. I live here in Anchorage. Now I'm speaking against House Bill 37. In view of the two-minute limitation, I'd like to say ditto to the two people from Kenai. And I think you really should listen to their testimony. These are people who actually have had an enormous amount of empirical experience with young women, the counselor and the teacher. And as they said, I mean, we're middle-class people, and of course, we all wish to have major consultation with our children. I have two daughters myself. I know, and I'm always interested in counseling them and talking to them. But it's quite inappropriate to have this requirement, and moreover, this bill is talking against itself. I mean, the fact is, you're under the first section, you say these are immature minors. Well, many of you, I think, probably are parents, and you know maturity is very important to raise a child, to care for a child. If you're totally immature, it's not very good for the child, is it? So the bill is talking against itself. If you think the child is too immature to make a decision, in that case, it's totally ridiculous to say that that person should be a child parent. So I think it would really be in the very best interest of the state of Alaska to vote against House Bill 37. It's a disservice to our state. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Fletcher. Any questions? Seeing none, Brant McGee.
She had to leave. The next person or last person here is Thea Pittman. My name is Thea Pittman, and I live in Midtown, Anchorage. I'd like to make some observations about some of the comments I've heard in the last 2 hours. I've heard Ms. Kohler speak several times. It was my understanding that she's an attorney for a pro-life organization, not a doctor. She cited several cases, and of course, she only gave you the information about those cases that support her viewpoint. The California case, for instance, presently the parental consent with judicial bypass is upheld, but that is subject to re-review by the California Supreme Court. That case, I believe it's the American Academy of Pediatrics, is one that was examined last year by legislative counsel when this bill was called SB-105, and I'm sure they can provide you with a summary of that case. It's very illuminating because the trial court proved that this kind of legislation does not encourage parent-child communication. It doesn't accomplish its stated purpose. And so I suggest to you that this legislation has no reason for being. The Florida case, even though it overturned the law, still has a lot of information worth reading, and that's in RE-TW. Minnesota Hodgson, that case, there's a huge amount of information on it, and actually, originally that parent. What I would suggest to you about the 38% figure, the increase in second trimester abortions, means that those young women have to wait, have delays in their abortions, and in fact, it's preferable and safer the earlier in a pregnancy that one can have an abortion. So that is an important number and shouldn't be dismissed as, oh, all it really means is that they have second trimester abortions. What Minnesota means is that 3,500 young women had to go to court for no good reason. Similarly, in another state, over a period of years, in 14,000 cases, not one of them resulted in a woman being turned down and consequently not having an abortion. Let me just close by saying, Mr. Heffer says we will be back, and the question is back for what? The ultimate goal is the elimination of abortion. I suggest to you that if you begin to question witnesses carefully, you'll find out that the ultimate goal is to ban the pill, condoms, IUDs, methods of contraception which would prevent unplanned pregnancies, and are the things that would really prevent abortion. Effective contraceptives correctly used. And that's the subject you should be working on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pittman. Any questions?
Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Representative Kelly, I'm sorry.
Just to reiterate the statistic that 38%, the second trimester abortions did decrease, just not as dramatically. There was not an increase, as she was saying.
I had questions
Representative
on that.
Representative Crock.
Thank you, sir. Do you have a full amount of information on the Minnesota court? Because if the pregnancies decrease, then it's a function of that. The proportion of pregnancies ended by abortion may have stayed the same, and the increase in second trimester proportionally may actually be an increase. I mean, it depends on what numbers you're starting from. Do you have a complete
set? I think we do, and I'll give it to your office.
Thanks. Actually, just to follow up on that, also, I'd be very curious to know if there's anything else going on in Minnesota at the same time.
Baseball. Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that, and that is certainly valid. You have to look at statistics within the entire environment, and I don't know the answer to that.
Yes, Representative Bundy.
Well, being the subject came has come up with a previous testimony, I'd ask Representative Kelly directly, is your intent to go, as you was said, this would be the first step indicated by one person to pursue the subject of pregnancy to the point of removal of birth control devices for.
Is this having to do with parental consent?
If this is the camel's nose under the tent, I'd like to know.
I don't know that necessarily pertains to the parental consent. We have Amy Skillbred here in the audience. Amy, would you like to testify, please?
Hi.
You know the big guy to your left there?
Right, yeah. My name is Amy Skillbred, and I'm testifying for the Alaska Civil Liberties Union. When explicit privacy protection, Article 1, Section 22, was added to the Alaska Constitution, no one dropped a footnote that said, this will apply to some people, but not to others. Every Alaskan is protected by the constitutional privacy provision. Young people have a right to privacy. Young women have a right to privacy. Their privacy rights may only be denied when the government shows a compelling state interest is served by denying these individuals the privacy rights due everyone. HB 37 applies to approval for abortion, but not to other medical services which teenagers can access on their own. There is no particular state interest that sets abortion apart from these other private medical circumstances. The young woman whom this bill seeks to rein in currently can have a child, can receive various kinds of medical treatment, including birth control pills, can relinquish a child for adoption, all without parental consent. Attempting to reduce the number of abortions taking place by interfering with young women who seek them do not does not constitute a state interest, much less a compelling one. This interference is simply in the interest of one political viewpoint, and the moral standards or political or religious viewpoint of one group of citizens does not a compelling state interest make. As everyone knows, abortion is protected throughout this country under the federal constitution. It is quite a stretch to think that a state like Alaska, one of the few that has explicit state constitutional provisions guaranteeing privacy rights, can assert a state interest to inhibit young women's doing something when that very act has been determined by the Supreme Court to be protected under federal law. This bill is pattern legislation, one of many such bills being introduced by anti-abortion movement all over the country. It's one of the many tactics being used to erode abortion rights. And Mr. Chairman, I don't know how many of you sew, but I do. And this has struck me as when you sew, you need a pattern and you need material. The pattern we have before us is the pattern legislation, that we have before us. When you put this pattern legislation over the material, the tough, tightly woven material of the Alaska Constitution, you cannot cut it. It just doesn't work. The constitutional privacy provisions are very strong in our state. HB 37 is no match for the privacy guaranteed to young women in the Alaska Constitution and deserves no further hearings in the state. We request a do not pass on this bill. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Several comments. Representative James.
Well, go ahead. He was first.
All right.
Representative Bundy. Well, there's one who does know how to sew on a button and darn his own socks.
I do my darn socks, too.
Yeah, okay.
You have two socks.
I would like to address or get the at least your opinion, if not the ACLU's opinion, on away from the issue of abortion and just the issue of medical procedures. And we hear frequently about you can't have, the schools can't give an aspirin. I'd be amazed if minors could have their bodies punctured as they frequently do without permission. And how does this differ? You understand that I'm looking at the parental consent for just a medical procedure, not for the emotional or philosophical involvement that abortion brings.
If I understand you correctly, teenagers can get pregnancy prevention pills. Mm-hmm. Or contraceptives of different sorts, and that doesn't require a parental consent for that. And so, and that is a drug, that is a medical tactic.
I guess I separate that out from surgical procedures. I don't think they could go and have a nose job or silicone lips or something without parental consent. And see, does privacy come into play there as well?
I don't know the answer to that, but
Perkowitz
seems to know.
We may be asking the wrong questions to the witness. We may need to talk to somebody who has legal background or is
right.
in school.
Right, I'm not a lawyer.
Oh, so. I'm sorry. I thought you were speaking for the ACLU.
I am speaking for the ACLU, but I'm not a lawyer.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you, not being a lawyer either,
okay.
Do you know?
But he does a good.
But
impression.
I can get you.
He's one in the legislature.
Can I borrow your pen?
Oh, sure.
I'll try and answer your question. Get back to you.
Do you know whether or not this particular issue was discussed by the legislature or was found in the pro or con statements that supported the right to privacy ballot?
I don't know, but I can get that for you.
Representative James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Skillbred,
yes.
Let me just preface my question in that I strongly believe in parental rights on no matter what it is, and I believe in the minority of a person until they're 18. But my question for you is, because you alluded that this or stated that this rights of privacy overweighs any minority that a child might have. And so my question to you is, and I agree with your statements that if one thing is not right, they're all not right. I mean, that parental consent means parental consent for everything that a child does, or at least the obligation for a person to notify the parent if they're involved in something so that the parent is informed. But at what age of a young person do you believe that privacy is the overwhelming determinant for a person or persons, both male or female, to engage in intercourse that would cause a pregnancy? When does that privacy click in? And then once that happens, at what age then is it a privacy issue? And what other privacy issues do children face? Is use of drugs okay? All of the other kinds of misbehaviors that children do they have the privacy of that too, to get some kind of treatment for that without involving their parents?
I'm going to speak on a personal note here because I don't know the ACLU opinion, except that, well, let me speak on a personal note. I am a parent. I have two children. I believe I'm a good parent. I would hope that as my children grow older and enter their teenage years, if my daughter became pregnant or my son caused someone to become pregnant, that they would come to me or come to their father and talk to us about it. Will they always do that? No. Our children don't always come to us. And I believe that there's been a lot of testimony today from people who have shown that some went to their parents and some did not. And I would just hope that my children would, and I would try and do everything to make sure that they do. There was also testimony about people saying they really hoped that the government would step in here and enforce parental rights. I don't see the government as stepping in and enforcing my parental rights with my children. I think that it is incumbent on me and my husband to build a family in which our parental rights are adhered to by our children. But that doesn't work for everybody. So I don't have it.
We have several people here.
I understand that, but I don't
there is no age. There is no cutoff line.
Okay. I guess I would like to talk to you outside of this because I have a lot of questions to discuss on that issue. Having been a parent and a foster parent, and the privacy issue is so much bigger than this, that I would like to discuss it with you if you don't mind.
I'd be happy
sometime
to stop by.
Jenny Berkowitz.
I just wanted to point out, in response to some of the questions that have floated here, is that Title 25, Section 20025, basically, aside from the issue of termination of pregnancy, endows a minor with full range of the ability to give consent on medical issues. Full range. There should be an attempt by the medical provider to contact the parents, and there's all manner of provision that protection and weighing and balancing that has to go on. The caveat is that once the minor signs up for the medical treatment, the provider is not going to be able to go after the parents for payment. So I think that perhaps might weigh in our decision later on.
Representative James.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to an opportunity to respond to that, maybe we ought to expand this bill.
Looks like Wanda Mead. Could be Honda Mead.
Honda Head.
Head. Oh.
Sorry.
Excuse me.
Hi.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. My name is Hannah Hid. I am a retired resident here in Juneau. Before moving to Alaska, I had been a licensed, certified social worker in Michigan. And back that time was really, I'm sorry to say, an active proponent of abortion. Before it was legalized, I fought hard and long to get it legalized, never believing that it would ever go to what it has. I do support this bill as far as it goes. It's sad that we have to pass bills protecting parents' rights with their children. Since being here in Juneau, I've talked with many gals, young ladies, who have gone through these abortions without their parents knowing it. Contact Department of Education if you want to find out how it's done. Some of them have had medical problems afterwards. One of the girls, her mother and father didn't know anything about this until they received a bill from the clinic. They had no idea that the girl was even pregnant. She was shipped outside for an abortion and back before she was due home from school that night. What happens if the girl goes into some kind of shock or has to have medical treatment afterwards? Who pays for that? Okay, the parents, yes. It's their responsibility to support the children. But they have a right to know if this child is going to have an abortion. Can the girl go in and have implants done without them knowing? Can she have her tonsils removed or her appendix just because, you know, well, you know, it, I don't want it. I don't need it. It's not necessary. Okay, whatever reason. This is a major thing. It's a serious operation. One little girl, as a social worker, I took her to the clinic. She came out. She was in tears. This was a legal clinic. The doctor, it hurt. It terrible. And the doctor told me I was a big baby because I cried. I took her back to her home, and that was it. And years later, this girl is going through some pretty horrible things. She says she wishes that she had never had that abortion. I know of several cases here in Juneau that the girls have been made sterile since their abortions. They want, a couple of them are married now and want to have children. They can't get pregnant. It's just a constant thing. Parents have a right to know. If they don't have a right, why don't you give them cigarettes in school? I mean, I don't know. It's just very, very frustrating. And as far as our libertarian friend says, they have a right to be individual, to be their own person. Who's going to pick up the bills for it?
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Head. We have Nikki Sullivan.
Thank you. My name's Nikki Sullivan, and I'm testifying on behalf of myself, but I have been a past volunteer for crisis pregnancy, working with post-abortion counseling and education, and that's with women that have had abortions. I'm no longer in that position right now. I've stepped down. I've taken a break. A very emotional position working with women that have gone through the trauma of abortion. I've had training, lay training, but intensively both here in Juneau and also in Denver, Colorado at the PACE Training Center. My question to you is, I'm in support of this bill. But one thing that I would like to see brought in further, working with women that have had an abortion and are suffering from post-abortion trauma, is that there is some, even with the judicial bypass, there is some way to get these young women informed about what abortion is. Because that is what we hear over and over again working with these women. I didn't know. They told me it was tissue. And I've been asked to come in to talk with youth, both in churches and in schools. And they are amazed. I take in the fetal models, and they are amazed. 16 and 17-year-olds that have had biology, they are amazed with the fetal models. You're actually able to pick them out of the uterus, and they hold them and they say, I didn't know this is what it looked like. Wow, this is what a baby looks like inside the womb. And you know, these young women need to be informed with what's going on. And I believe that the parent is the best one that can talk to them about this. And beyond that, if they go to the judicial bypass, they need to be informed then. Because the people that they go to, for the most part, I don't want to stereotype the whole counseling system, but for the most part, the people do not tell them the repercussions of abortion. They don't present that issue. And for the people that have called in about the judicial bypass being intimidating, then I would ask them to go into an abortion clinic with a young woman. I was pro-choice in my late teens and early 20s. I escorted many women to abortion clinics. I myself was a patient in abortion clinics. And if you think going before a judge is intimidating, you go into an abortion clinic and be strapped down and go through the procedure of abortion if you want to talk about intimidation. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikki. Are there any questions?
Ooh. Any questions?
I guess not. Thank you. Very, very. Yes, Representative.
I just wanted to comment on what Representative Berkowitz had said before. I think I have that statute in front of me, and I would certainly disagree that a minor has full range of medical consent. It has a lot of provisos on here, whether the parent can be contacted and those kinds of things. So I think it's a bit of a mischaracterization to say that they have full range. There are a lot of qualifiers for it.
Thank you.
Maybe I did indicate that there were qualifiers available as part of it, but that it was not unheard of for a minor to be able to make those kind of decisions. If I didn't make that clear,
I'm sorry,
I apologize.
Maybe I didn't.
No, sometimes I'm not as artful with words as I like to be.
We have Pat Denny in the audience.
You're experiencing a plethora of social workers, I think, today. My name is Pat Denny, and I have been a social worker. I'm retired now. I have been a social worker for 40 years, worked in maternity service and as a family therapist and with adoptions, child protection. And I want to speak in favor of this bill and also to talk for a very brief time about how I think this is a strengthening of the family. And perhaps following the simile of the young lady talked about sewing, I sew too, and I think that the fabric that we're working on is the family. And many, many times when I was working with girls who were pregnant, they were very reluctant to tell their parents that they were pregnant. Would be reluctant to tell their parents that they had a drug problem or that they were failing school. And this is, you know, a more serious nature. But at the time when they needed to tell their parents, because working in states where this was a requirement that for family consent, in very few situations did I find that this did not strengthen the family. They would come and they'd say they didn't know that dad or mom could be so supportive of them in this difficult situation. And it almost always would turn out to be a strengthening of the family. Now, we heard testimony that it seems that so many of the family situations are dysfunctional families and sexual abuse, and certainly there are families where this is the case. But because teenage pregnancy is such an epidemic, there are all sorts of families. And many, many of those families are the kind that will come to the fore and help their youngster to go through this very, very serious situation where if they don't have this kind of support, and sometimes the girls we're talking about are not always 17, 16-year-olds, you know, they're the 14-year-olds, and sometimes if it becomes too much of a simple procedure where they're encouraged to think of it as just a bit of protoplasm that's being aborted, they will go through the experience again, and we can have 14 and 15-year-olds who've had multiple abortions. And what this means for them in their future years is something that they need to understand and their families need to understand.
Are there any, yes, Representative Berkowitz.
And we've been discussing pregnancy as if it was a spontaneous event. My biology classes are several years behind me, but as I recall, there's a precursor that has to occur first. It would seem to me that perhaps the emphasis ought to be on deterring unwanted pregnancy.
Oh, of course. Of course. I wouldn't argue with you on that.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Sid Heiersdorf, I saw him earlier. There he is.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me. Too long sitting, I guess. Members of the committee, my name is Sid Heiersdorf. I'm here testifying as a concerned citizen. I support House Bill 37, and we've heard today a lot of heart-wrenching stories and on both sides. I think those who support the bill have their share of these tough stories, and those who are opposed to the bill have the same stories. But I would ask that you step back and just pass this as being simply good public policy. Many people in the street, just right off the bat, they just assume that parents have the rights to have their children consult with them when they have an abortion. And this is a very, very serious matter. It's literally a life and death decision. The parents certainly have the responsibilities for their children. We acknowledge this. And in cases where there are abusive families, dysfunctional families, I certainly hope they're in the great minority. I don't know what percent that's the case, but we have the judicial bypass to take care of that situation. But I think there's a bigger, better reason for that, and that is to protect the children. I think that we don't have to look very far before we find young girls who are pregnant, who are forced by their boyfriend or finally convinced against their will, maybe school counselors, to have abortions. And being forced to consult with their parents, who we certainly would assume have their best interests at heart, would then assure that they had some of this information that we heard talked about before, the necessity of being told what really is involved, what the alternatives are, what the options are. And I know it's getting late here, and I just want to make one other point. People have talked about pregnant girls either they will go to their parents when they're pregnant, or they will not go to their parents when they're pregnant. And more or less saying that House Bill 37 will have no impact. Well, I contend there's a third group. There's a group in the middle, on the margins, who under the influence of a law will go to their parents. And I think that's the group we should be thinking about. These girls who need the teachings of the law. And this is a law which supports the family, which shows that the state is concerned about the structure of the family, the integrity of the family. And this group of girls that need to know it's required they go to their parents is the group that this bill will provide the most help for. And with that, I will conclude my testimony. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Heiersdorf? Thank you very much, Sid. Johnny Monagle.
Mr. Chair, John Monagle from Juneau here, Alaskans for Life, and we would support this kind of legislation. I hear about parents' rights. I think maybe it should be parents' responsibilities. I'm a parent, and it's hard to be responsible if you don't know the facts. Another point probably keeps harping back to me is this issue about a child in school can, you can't give them an aspirin or remove a wart, but by golly, it'd be all right to have an abortion. That doesn't sit well here. And so none of my people that I would represent would admit to child abuse, but they would all be in favor of this kind of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you, Johnny. Any questions of Mr. Monigal? Thank you very much. And Sandy King? She left. Dr. Nakamura?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving me this opportunity. I'm Dr. Nakamura. I'm the director of the Division of Public Health for the Department of Health and Social Services. And what I'd like to do is just make a couple of brief statements and respond to some of the issues that I've heard and see if I can provide answers to some of those issues. I guess that probably the first thing that we'd all agree on is some common grounds. And one of the common grounds is that we all want to see the numbers of abortions reduced. Contrary to what one individual said, there are ways to reduce these abortions through early intervention, through better education, through more opportunities for family planning and family life interventions. Another thing that I think we all agree on is that that parents should be involved in the affairs of their children, especially in terms of accessing medical care. And I think we'd all agree in most circumstances it's probably a very positive involvement, and the child generally benefits from it. Unfortunately, this is not always a situation. In fact, in most of those situations, you don't need a law to bring about the parental involvement with the children. What we found out, I think, in most of our studies, and there are a number of studies out there, they show about 60%, 61% of these unmarried, minor, pregnant women, children, will go and seek the counsel of their parents. There's another 40% that won't, but of those 40%, approximately 20% will seek counsel from another responsible adult, whether it be a teacher, a member of the clergy, some other member of the family, some other member of the community. The unfortunate thing about this is those 40% who will not seek parental involvement, about one-third of those already are in abusive family situations. They're in situations, and to give you an indication of how frequent these situations are, there are about 4 to 5 million cases of domestic violence known to the court systems annually. And there's at least half as many of these families that have children who have been abused in these homes. The problem with legislation like this is it does force these children back into an environment which is a bit not only rather coercive, but one that they're trying to avoid in the first place. And legislation will not, in most circumstances, and I heard one individual who's had experience and has had positive experiences, but overall the testimony I've heard is that you can't bring these kids into a dysfunctional home and hope that you can improve communications and bring about in that situation a greater parental support. In fact, the time that most violence comes about in these domestic situations is when a family member is pregnant. And this is not the time to try to solve the dysfunction that was there prior to that. A couple of issues that have come up. One was the written reference to the 38.4%. I think we've had some messages in this. It's been turned to represent abortions. It really is the number of increase of teen deliveries. Births to teenagers in Minnesota went up by 38.4%. And I think where you'll find that is in the Council of the Ethics and Judicial Rights Council for the American Medical Association, and their testimonies on this issue quoted the 38.4% figure. What you also find out is that the numbers of abortions did decrease in the three states that were studied, where such a law had been implemented. But you find that there was also a concomitant number of abortions done in the adjacent states. What you also find is the second trimester abortions do go up relative to the total abortion numbers in these states. So that all the figures that I've have access to would indicate that the judicial bypass, or I mean the parental consent laws, does not help. One last comment. I know that there are many questions, but the judicial bypass is a concern. There was an amendment to the initial bill. I see a problem not only with access to the judicial system in a rural area, a significant problem with access, but I can't envision a situation in which a youngster in a community without even pay phones would be able to call up the judicial system and get the kinds of permissions needed to get an abortion. First off, it's unlikely that they would use this telephone that's in a home with usually quite large families in a very small home. They're not going to go to the public library or some other place where there's a public phone. So I'm not quite sure how such a an opportunity would be available for accessing the judicial system, even with a telephone consent process.
Dr. Nakamura,
sure.
If I heard you correctly, that of the 40%, about a third of those are from abusive families.
Yes.
And would not want to go to their parents. Now, that's somewhere 12-13%, somewhere in that range. And if with the judicial bypass, you might assume maybe half of those would seek that recourse, that would leave then maybe 5-7%, something in that range, single digit at least, that would be perhaps caught up in this this dilemma if this bill were to pass. Isn't that a pretty good
The numbers that would be caught up with it, again, we're all speculating in this.
Uh-huh.
But the numbers who would be benefiting from this, as Sid Heiderstorff mentioned, there is a group that could benefit by increased parental involvement. But the numbers of these is really quite small, and I believe Sid even quoted that this number is quite small. The numbers that would still be affected by a, and I can't even tell you that half of them would even seek a judicial bypass. This is all speculation,
sure,
too. But the numbers that would be involved would still be significant. But what's significant? Is it 24, 36, or 50? For me, as a
abortion rate went up for teenagers to take up the slack of those that didn't have them done in the study states. Would that still be a problem, do you think, the same kind of a problem in this state, which doesn't have states bordering it like Minnesota and some of these other states?
That I can't tell you, but because access to an abortion in this state is really quite difficult. There aren't many places where they're conducted. Already, these kids have to go significant ways, even just to access a procedure. So I can't tell you whether they would go to other states. Very unlikely. Very unlikely.
Representative James.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Nakamura. Sure. A couple of things. You mentioned that in the rural areas, that getting, because of no pay phones and all those things,
sure,
difficult to get to the court. What do young girls, let's talk about girls because this is basically,
sure,
a girl thing we're talking about here. What do young girls do if they experience abuse at home, incest or rape, and they can't talk to their parents about that? Where would they go for help?
They usually would go to a peer, most likely someone that they feel comfortable speaking
with. Another child?
It could be a child. It could be an older child. It could be a responsible adult. It could be the teacher. It could be a member of the clergy. It could be another, as mentioned, at least 20% of those who are pregnant and unmarried do seek counsel from another responsible adult.
Well, Well, then my follow-up question is, couldn't that person then lead them to the court procedure, the judicial bypass? I mean, wouldn't that be their step in the right direction to get help?
It's very conceivable they could. It's very conceivable.
That's the way they do it now?
But there's one concern in this whole process is somehow maintaining confidentiality in this whole process in a small community, even when you have and a responsible adult involved, for them to be able to go through this process and maintain that confidentiality is a very significant issue. I heard, and may I deviate a bit on this?
Sure.
I heard a comment that the power of the parent to control their child is a right that should be enforced. I've heard that more than once. In this, we're saying that the child does not have a right for privacy. I believe that child does have a right for privacy.
Starting when?
That's, again, I couldn't begin to answer that one for you. It depends on the issue.
The 10-year-old? The 10-year-old have privacy?
This is not across the
country. No, I mean, I'm just following
up. It depends. If I'm a physician, and a 10-year-old would come into me with a problem, and as I counsel and work with that child, if I'm really concerned about this child, the first thing I would do is ask this child to involve the parent or the family. If there's such a major barrier there that this child will not do this, and I know that this child will go out and harm themselves because they no way will subject themselves to an abusive situation, then in that case, I would say I would listen to that child. And I would try to maintain that child's privacy and try to seek some help otherwise. So, yes, I would say a 10-year-old in certain situations does have that right to privacy.
And if I could go on, because this is a very important issue here for me, and because this is, to me, this is only has to do with the parental rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with some of the statements that were made earlier that we cannot legislate parental behavior. I agree with that. But we can interfere with it by putting laws on the books that allow people to go around it. And that's my biggest concern when there's no, when the child's rights and so forth come ahead of that. So my concern is, would you, and you're a doctor now, would you, if you had someone confide in you that they couldn't talk to their parents and it was a serious issue, pregnancy is a serious issue, would you then believe that that's an abusive relationship or a relationship that needed to be reported to the Department of Health and Social Services as a serious condition as to whether or not that child should be remaining at home?
Yeah, I probably would need more information. I probably would need a lot more information than we have at this point to make that kind of a judgment. I heard one lady testify that she was not given that opportunity or that information was not gained. I would need more before I could.
And I understand that. I understand. But let's say this is a 14-year-old girl who's pregnant. And she just absolutely insists that she cannot tell her parents at home because, I mean, her father would beat her. Maybe there is, other reasons, but she's just literally afraid. She gives you some stories as to what would have happened to her if she does this sort of thing. Would you be obligated then, as well as referring her to the proper place to get an abortion, would you also be obligated to report that to social services so they could investigate the family and see if a foster home needed to be?
Yes, by law, I would have to report such a situation.
Okay, so you're saying that if then, that's my understanding then, we have a young girl who's pregnant, mm-hmm. She goes to get an abortion. Will, and she tells the abortion clinic, maybe she does under this current system, I guess she doesn't have to tell them, that I'm here on my own and I can't tell my parents because they would just beat me up and whatever. Does the abortion clinic under the current law have any responsibility to report that to the social services?
And they would, yes.
And then the social services then would have a responsibility to see whether or not that child, after having an abortion, should go back to that home or not.
They would have a responsibility, yes.
Because now what you're doing is you're recognizing that there's a relationship between the child and the parent. I mean, you just don't take the child out without going back and telling the parents why you're doing it. Is that correct?
I guess I'm missing something.
Yeah. Okay, well, I don't mean to be putting you on the hot seat, but what I'm trying to do is find a pathway here. I certainly am supportive of finding abuse and neglect cases in all families, and I have no concern about that. What I am concerned about is whether or not we're destroying the opportunity for the situation in the home to be remedied, and whether or not that is protected either way, any way we go, that is an option. So thank you. You answered my questions, I think.
Thank you. Thank you. I didn't realize I answered it, but thank you.
Yeah, you did. Doug.
Good work.
Yeah, you did.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doctor,
sure.
I guess a comment and then rather than use the question and answer thing. It just seems to me patently obvious that a minor who was pregnant, who now has the wherewithal to figure out how to get to, as you say, limited legal abortion facilities, would have the wherewithal to get to one of the myriad courts that exist in the state. Much more so than the in number, much more so than the abortion clinic. So I'll just say that for the record. But I didn't quite follow the data that you were giving us on how many of these unwanted pregnancies might find themselves not wanting to tell their parents because they came from an abusive, dysfunctional family.
Well, okay. Roughly 60 to 61% of these unmarried, pregnant teenagers or children will seek parental consent. Of the remainder, one-third of those already are living or are exposed to abusive family situations.
So even in that segment, you're saying that we should have a law that affects one-third as opposed to the two-thirds?
No, I'm saying that of the two-thirds, in fact, all of these, this whole 40% that don't seek parental consent, the recommendations by the American Medical Association and others who deal with these situations is that as they counsel these children, they encourage them to gain to involve their parents. So at no point are we saying to even of the two-thirds, we're trying to discourage giving them access to their parents. This law is not going to help that situation as far as I can tell significantly. If they had the wherewithal to seek a judicial bypass, which is a very intimidating, very difficult situation, then that would resolve part of that two-thirds. If they had the wherewithal to do it. But I guess what I'm saying is that this law probably will not increase that parental involvement in any way. I don't know if I've quite answered your question. I think I not quite got it very clearly. Thank
you. Any other questions of Dr. Nakamura? Yes.
The discussion about what happens in rural communities, I think, is a bit of a red herring. And I think Representative James brought some of it up, and so did Representative Porter, and that is, if they don't have access to the judicial system, they can't get an abortion there either. And in order for them to get an abortion, there is going to be some kind of breach of privacy, because in these smaller communities, these people grow up within 100 yards of each other all their lives. And when one of them has to go off to Anchorage, either the parent, somebody is going to realize they're missing. And that is going to be a difficult task for any young person to achieve, to get to Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau or wherever to get the abortion. So to say they can't get to the courts, I believe, is a specious argument, because they can't get to an abortion either. We at least have given them the access to the courts so that they can do it telephonically. It is an option for them. So I don't think it is an argument. I've heard this testimony several times before, and I just don't think it's an argument. They can't get the abortion anyway without leaving that community.
Well, thank you, Dr. Nakamura. Yeah,
thank you.
Tom Gertie.
Hello, my name is Tom Gordy. I'm the representative for the Juneau Christian Coalition, as well as a youth minister for the past 8 years of my life. I've been working with youth since I was a youth, since I was 18, and I've counseled youth while I was even in high school about abortion and a lot of things that were brought up today I can attest to on both sides of the issue. I feel like a lot of things that were brought out today, like we're talking about legislating communication and whittling away of rights, these are non-issues here. What we're talking about is not taking away children's rights, because basically children's rights are limited anyway. What we're talking about is parental rights, and that's the right that has been whittled away, and we're talking about strengthening the family. And I meet with quite a few young people on a weekly basis, and I see that the family life in this city and across our country is deteriorating, and a lot of it is, I believe, due to legislation that has weakened the family and that has given kids the ability to accuse their parents. And this has happened in my youth group, where one of my young people accused her parents of abuse when the abuse was not there. She has run away more than 5 times and has accused her parents and of things that it couldn't have happened because the parents were not at home at the time. And so a lot of these things, I think, are just, like you said, red herrings. We talk about, as a youth minister, I'm taking our kids to Los Angeles this summer to a conference. In order for me to take these kids, I have to have a medical permission form. In order for me to, if there is an emergency where I have to take a child to the hospital, I have to have that medical permission form to have parental consent to perform, for that hospital perform anything. And this is a medical procedure, according to many people. And I believe that this is a bill that I fully support. Parents need to have control over their children. Kids can run away and they can accuse their parents of all kinds of things, but if the kid breaks into a house, then the parents are responsible for the damage. And the kids aren't even there. I mean, not even under the jurisdiction of the parents at the time, but they are. The schools tell them that the kids have rights, but when the kids disobey the law, the parents are the ones who are punished for the kids breaking the law. And if we're going to take it that direction, we need to take this in that same direction, that if parents are going to be responsible when the kids break the law, they should be responsible for everything that a kid is involved in. And so I encourage you to pass this on for passage. And when it comes down to one situation, when I was in high school, a friend of mine came to me and he said, I got Ashley pregnant. There's a friend, both these were friends of mine, and Ashley went to her parents and told her parents about her being pregnant, and they wanted her to get an abortion, which she did not want to, and she did not get the abortion. And so I fully believe in dual consent, that this is something that in order for an abortion to be performed, both parties must fully agree that it's going to have to happen. And so I encourage you to send this forward and pass it. Thank you. Any questions?
Tom, you say you have counseled these young people. Do, in a situation where a young lady gets pregnant and either has the child or has an abortion, do many of them stay in your group? In other words, what I'm trying to get at is we heard some testimony today that there is a lingering thing that will surface years after the abortion, that really is almost debilitating to a woman. Have you witnessed any of that with the younger girls?
Well, in my ministry, fortunately, I've only had one of my youth become pregnant, and she chose to carry the baby to term, and she remained to be a part of our youth ministry and our youth group. She was even married. And because she was, we still loved her, we still cared about her, you know, that didn't affect the way we felt about her. And one of the things I teach our teenagers is that when they're in high school, their friends will tell them to do all kinds of things, and they will tempt them and test them, and they do. And I found that when I went off to college, the people that I hung around with in high school, I don't see them anymore. I had no relationship with them, but I still had a relationship with my parents. And I could always go back to my parents. No matter what I've done, no matter where I went, I could always go to my parents. Because my friends, whenever they get a job or something, they've gone, they've moved off. And they could care less about me and what's going on in my life. And they may tempt me to do something wrong, and I could do something wrong and go to jail, but they don't care about me, but my parents still do. And so and the schools can do the same things. The schools, as soon as those kids are out of the school, they care less about them. They've done past them, they've done their job, they've either educated them or they've not educated them, and after they've graduated, hey, they're out of here. But the parents still care for these kids. They still love them. And I know there's abuse in homes. I'm not trying to get away from that. And there's more of that today, they say, than there was just a few years ago. But generally, kids can always go back to their parents. And their parents love them. And I think that's one of the things that we've got to try to understand here is we've got to talk about more than just the physical aspect of this. We're talking about relationships. We're talking about people, eternal beings. And this bill, I feel, will help build those relationships. I found that when a teenager got pregnant, she told her parents. After that, the relationship actually grew closer to one another than them falling apart. The parents actually took a greater interest in their child's life and in their grandchild's life than before. It really brought them closer together.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions? Appreciate your testimony. Thank you. The last person we have signed up is Angela Salerno. It's been a long day.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chairman Green, members of the committee. My name is Angela Salerno. I'm Executive Director of the National Association of Social Workers, which is a professional membership association for professional social workers. As we debate parental consent, of course we know what we're really debating is abortion. And that debate on abortion continues to be rancorous and divisive and polarizing. And we've heard a great deal of testimony today, quite emotional testimony on both sides, and a great deal of anecdotal information. And I want to just thank personally everybody who shared their stories today, because I think that does add to the debate. Unfortunately, it doesn't get us to what are the facts. When you read the bill, there are some findings that are included with the bill. One of them is about protecting the health of the minor woman. And just as a side here, can we please remember that this person is a woman, and this is a unique situation. It is not ear piercing. It is not body piercing. It is a unique and personal situation that women, young women, have to go through. So I want to just read into the public record some facts about abortion that come from well-respected medical associations. Teenage girls are more than 24 times more likely to die from childbirth than from a first trimester legal abortion. The longer that we make all women wait, the more dangerous abortion becomes. So in fact, what we could be doing here is increasing risks to the woman, to the young girl. The American Medical Association has noted, and I quote, "Because the need for privacy may be compelling, minors may be driven to desperate measures to maintain the confidentiality of their pregnancies. They may run away from home, obtain back alley abortion, or resort to self-induced abortion. The desire to maintain secrecy has been one of the leading reasons for illegal abortion deaths since 1973. That's the American Medical Association. That was quick.
That was quick. It was real, but.
Well, could you indulge me with two more minutes?
Because I can indulge you with two more sentences.
Two more
then
sentences.
Then we'll ask questions, and then you maybe can get some time. We have somebody else who's come on in teleconference, too.
And I won't talk about the fact that the American Psychiatric Association says there is no such thing as post-abortion trauma. But let me just say that we are skirmishing about access to abortion. We've heard overwhelming testimony that this is about outlawing abortion. We are targeting our most vulnerable citizens in this debate right now, and I think that's something that is not a compelling interest to the state. Thank you.
Angela, I don't know where conception can start, but somewhere 11, 12 years old, a woman, as you say, can become pregnant. Is it your feeling that that woman should be entitled to go into a bar and drink or drive an automobile or do these other things? Should she be able to go to the service and defend our country and some of these other things that, that women do?
No, I do not.
Wait a minute. You said she's a woman. And if she's a woman and she can have intercourse and then go have an abortion, shouldn't she have those other rights as well?
I don't think those things are equal in any fashion. I think procreation, the right to the decision whether or not to become a parent, the decision whether or not to have control over your body is very different than those other things you described. That's my personal
opinion. So if she wants to have a breast implant, that's control over her body. That's okay.
I would think
she wants to have liposuction, that's certainly control over her body.
It is.
And you're saying that 11-year-olds should have that right?
I'm saying an 11-year-old should probably get all the facts about that, as 11-year-olds do about abortion. I just don't think those two things are unequal, personally.
Is it because of the sexual connotation that we're separating all the other parts of the body except that? And we're saying, you need to have parental consent for everything but that, but because there's a stigma, there's embarrassment, there's some other thing that's involved here because there is some sort of a sexual connotation. It's like reporting AIDS or things like that. Those are different. Those need to be protected. Our right of privacy now surfaces above.
I think you've just hit it on the head there, Chairman Green. It's about privacy. And that's what Roe v. Wade talked about and what that decision affirmed, that women do have the right to privacy around abortion.
You have a question.
Hey, when you began to testify, I thought you said it was about abortion. I guess my question is addressing that. The last survey that I read, there was reported at least to be more people that were pro-choice in this state than there were that were pro-life. If that is the case, given a normal statistical spread of unwanted pregnancies in families, wouldn't you have more of them happening in pro-choice families than pro-life? And if that is the case, why would that be a problem? If a child was going to have an abortion.
I'm sorry, what was your question? What would be the...
Well, you began this to say, let's not kid ourselves. This isn't about parental rights. It's about abortion. But if over 50% of the folks, adults, favor abortion, I would assume, given the normal circumstance, they would favor abortion for their child if they thought that that was appropriate in that particular instance.
Correct.
Well, then why do you say it's about abortion?
I said it was about abortion because I think this is part of a larger strategy to restrict access to abortion.
I see. Can I presume you're pro-choice?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, may I?
Yes.
Yes, you may.
Since
we're doing it
yes.
that way.
I think that's probably a good assumption.
Well, I don't know if you have kids, but if you had a daughter and she were 14 years old and had a totally unwanted pregnancy, and in your opinion, having that child would not be a benefit to your family or your daughter or anybody else you could think of, would you support her notion to not have an abortion?
Yes, I would.
Or, I mean, to have an abortion?
Either way.
Yeah.
I certainly would. And I, if I could just respond, I think that within the parenting relationship, and it was spoken to from a previous speaker, it doesn't start when the girl is 14 and finds herself pregnant. Good family relationships and good parental relationships start, you know, from day one. So I would hope in that circumstance that I had been a good enough parent to earn my child's respect, and that I was a good enough parent to have developed a good relationship with my child throughout that time.
No doubt about it. But you also counseled against getting pregnant, and by golly, here we are. You know what happens.
Sure.
I think there's a natural reluctance in kids, especially those that have a good relationship with their parents, to want mm-hmm. their parents to respect them and like them and not want to think ill of them for doing something that was wrong, like get a bad grade even. There is a reluctance on the part of kids to tell their parents bad news.
Absolutely.
Even if they love them very much. Wouldn't you not want to run the risk that that could happen very easily because somebody else was counseling your child to go ahead and circumvent you? But you'd rather participate in that decision?
Of course. Of course I would rather participate in that decision. But, again, I would hope that my family was one that had the capacity to deal with it. I'm not worried about my family, per se. I'm not worried about your family. I'm worried about those families in which this will be a devastating blow to the family, so much so that the child will be in danger. I think that will happen. I think that there will be families who simply cannot handle it.
Representative Porter?
Just one little response. If more people felt like that, rather than what you previously said, that this is just the step towards the nose under the tent, and what we're really going to do here is go pro-life, then I'd throw in with you. But that isn't what this is. This is about parents, because I am pro-life or pro-choice, and I'm supporting this bill. So it isn't about abortion.
I disagree with you, Representative.
Any other questions?
Well,
yes, Representative James.
I do have a question, and it goes back to the privacy of kids and when they get it and when they don't get it and what's involved in privacy. As a parent and a foster parent, and I look back on when my children were young, I gave them privacy, but I knew everything about them. I believe as a parent, if you're going to be a parent, you can't have any secrets from your kids. You have to know what your kids are capable of doing. When they weren't there, everything that was in their room, I knew what it was, where it was, and everything. If it was something, a note or something that they wrote to their friends that might have been embarrassing, I read it. I never mentioned it to them. They didn't know I read it. But I knew what my children were doing. And if someone knew my children were doing something that I didn't know, and if they didn't let me know about it, they heard from me. Because if it was something serious enough, I needed to know about it. I wanted to know about it. My kids knew that this is the way it was. So there was no surprises or secrets. Did I go into the bathroom when they were into the bathroom? No, I gave them privacy. But I knew what they were doing while they were in there, you know, and I knew what they were capable of doing. So I guess, and I take offense at the fact that this has to do with abortion. Certainly it does, because abortion is the subtitle. It is parental rights on abortion. So it certainly does have an abortion connotation. And I am pro-life. However, I really like to believe that I let other people believe the way they believe, but I will refuse to be pro-choice because that means pro-abortion, and I can't do that. So I'm upset just because the pro-choice term has been taken away from me when I'm probably the most pro-choice person you could find, because I believe in everybody's rights and responsibilities are their own. But this is a parents' rights issue, and I think we've talked a little bit before. There's a lot of other areas in the law where the law and the government have come in and interfered with parents' rights. It's a little 5-year-old that came home and told her great-grandmother the other day that she didn't have to do what her parents, this was last year, doesn't have to do what her parents said anymore. And she says, where would you get that idea? Because my teacher says, I have rights.
We have one.
You know, and so that's I had just one that really brief question. I believe, or do you believe, that a parent has a responsibility to know what their children are up to?
Yes. I think the key term is responsibility. I think, but I am not a parent. Let me preface that, my next statement, that parents earn the right. I do not believe that parents get rights after they bear a child. I think it's something that is developed and earned throughout the child's life.
Let me interject. We have one other person here from Kenai who's come on board. Bob, are you still there?
Yeah.
Bob Bird?
Yes, I'm here.
Would you give us your testimony, and we then can resume this here in Juneau.
Thank you very much. And first of all, I want to thank the committee for holding these hearings later in the day. Many people have been desirous in the last few weeks, and I communicated to various legislators to try and hold us later in the day, and I thank you for it. I'm Bob Bird, like a bird that flies, and I'm the immediate past president of Alaska Right to Life, and I've also been a teacher for 23 years in the public high schools, 20 of them in Alaska. So I've got a lot of experience with this as well. I don't have with me names and dates, but I can provide oodles of them with a few calls and to various counselors and secretaries about parents who have called Right to Life in the last 10 years, let's say, where they have been upset and wringing their hands helplessly, wondering how come their child got an abortion without them knowing about it. And these are people who have said they were, quote, pro-choice, but they never realized that the law would permit their minor child to go ahead and have an abortion. And they always felt legally that the woman should have that option, but they were dumbfounded to discover that minor children could do this. And even more dumbfounded when they told us, gee, we've always have been loving, caring parents, and we can't understand why our daughter did this, but she did. And we basically have said, tell us about it. You know, that's the way the law stands. We've had a very difficult time over the last 24 years finally leaching into the public consciousness of what Roe versus Wade actually said. And this is because there's been a deliberate intention, in my opinion, in the media to always partially report the nature of Roe versus Wade. People still, I think people have now realized that it does mean abortion on demand all 9 months of pregnancy and with very few meaningful restrictions on it. And so the point I'm trying to make is there is a tremendous body of people out there, and like the legislator who just recently identified himself as pro-choice, I think you can, in conscience, support abortion rights and yet support this bill, because the facts of the matter is there are no rights that are absolute. All rights have limits. I have a right to drink a glass of wine, but I don't have a right to get drunk and to endanger the community. And if a person does have a right to abortion, and I don't agree that they do, but if you want to claim that, there are limits to it. And one of them is there are limits to the right of the minor child to get an abortion without parental knowledge or consent. So that is what I would like to throw in here in the very limited time I have. Dr. Nakamura's testimony, I thought...
We need to wrap up, Bob.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
Oh, you don't have to quit. Just wrap it up.
Yeah, I'm going to wrap it up. Dr. Nakamura's testimony that he would decide what a child's right to privacy is. Doctors aren't in the business of making the rules. That's an elected legislature to become the competent authority to decide what the rules will be on the limits to the right to privacy. And so while he might say he felt that a 10-year-old should have their privacy protected in cases X, Y, or Z, it's up to the legislature to make those decisions. So I just wanted to make sure that the good doctor's argument there, he's not the qualified authority to do that. And finally, the post-abortion syndrome, the lady there said the American Psychiatric Association stated that there was no such thing, but in fact, PAS, or post-abortion syndrome, was a term coined by the psychology profession. They were the first to identify it, not a legislature, or even the pro-life movement. And so there are psychological associations, psychiatric associations that, in fact, have it as an identifiable mental disorder, and they do professionally treat it. I guess it depends what organization you want to refer to.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Hearing none, I just found that there's Kimberly Hoover. Is she still here? I apologize, Kimberly. She has signed up.
Yes, I'm speaking out in opposition to this bill. I'm a member of the Juno Coalition for Pro-Choice. I'm mainly going to talk from my own personal experience, though, and represent myself. I think in an ideal world, kids would always go and talk to their, girls and women would go and talk to their parents when they have to make this kind of decision about what to do when they have an unwanted pregnancy. But from my work at the AWARE shelter, where I'm still a relief advocate, I saw what kind of, how many families are in chaos and the kinds of families where it would not be safe for a daughter to go to their parents to get consent for an abortion. And I think those are the girls, this bill is most unfair to the girls who come from disadvantaged homes, homes where there is abuse and alcoholism, and I know this has been brought up already. And I just feel like for that girl, you want to call her, she is the one who's going to have to live with that decision for the rest of her life, And if she feels like if she went and told her parents and she would be unsafe or she would be hurt, or if they would influence her decision and force her to have the child or force her to have an abortion, that's not fair. She is the one who's got to live with that decision for the rest of her life. And I feel very strongly about that because I got pregnant when I was 20. It was the most horrible decision I've ever had to make in my life about what to do when I was pregnant. I was upset and emotional and just, I have the best parents in the world, but I did not want to tell them because I didn't want anyone to influence my decision. I knew I had to live with it for the rest of my life. And I also am afraid that the judicial bypass idea wouldn't work very well because I remember how emotional I was at the time, and I'm just afraid for a teenage girl, she would not be able to go in front of a judge and ask for permission. That would be too scary and intimidating because it would have been for me even, even at 20. And even now, I think it would be too scary to do that.
Kimberly, you heard some other testimony previously that a young lady indicated that if you think it's traumatic to, in this case, you wouldn't be probably telling your parents at 20, but as a teenager, or in your case, to have to go to a judicial bypass was traumatic, that the process of having an abortion is far more traumatic. Would you subscribe to that?
No, I didn't find that in my experience. I went to the health clinic on my campus, I kind of had a counselor there to talk to, and then when I went and actually got the abortion, the procedure itself was not very traumatic, and physically especially, I don't think that is as traumatic as having to go through the legal system. I think that in my experience it would be more intimidating for me, and I think that other people would agree with that.
Now you would have, as the bill provides, you would have counsel provided as well as the system that you would need to go through. But you say that would be the trauma. Is it because you would be talking to perhaps an attorney or a judge?
Yes, I think that would be very scary to have to, to go before a judge and tell them your personal story. It's much easier to go into some kind of clinic or to a private medical, clinic and have a procedure done. I find it much more intimidating to go before a judge. Mm-hmm.
Representative Porter.
Well, I guess notwithstanding that, would you not, if this were law, try to assist someone who was in the situation and you were convinced had the kind of family that really would be hazardous to tell about this event? Wouldn't you try to assist that person, your program, do that through this process, even arranging?
Yes, I would, but I would be afraid. I mean, not every adult's going to be filing some trusted adult to go to help her with that situation. But yes, I would definitely try to help someone who came to me to assist her going through the legal process if it was the law.
Wouldn't you suppose anybody who was in the system, whether it's in a work shelter or abortion, parenthood counselors or whatever they are, knowing that this was the law, would try to help someone with the procedure?
I would hope so, but I just still feel like there are going to be some girls who are going to fall through the cracks and who may end up having a baby that they're not ready to take care of, you know, because they were too scared to go talk to any adult about it or, you know, to. They may put off the decision so long that it wouldn't be safe to get an abortion anymore, too, you know, or
That happens now.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I have a question, maybe because I'm old, maybe because I'm a male, but I'm having difficulty understanding that you as a young woman would allow yourself to have an abortion, to cease this whatever stage of life that might be.
Right.
And yet you would find it difficult to go ahead and have the baby and give the baby up for adoption. I'm having difficulty with this.
Right. You know what? That was
conscience.
That was my hardest decision. You know, I thought when I was pregnant, I thought, gosh, if someone came to me and said that they wanted this baby that I wasn't ready to take care of, that would be so hard. I would want to give it to them, but for me, I thought about it and thought about it and cried. And what I decided was it was harder for me to carry the baby and to give birth to it and give it away than to end my pregnancy. And I know not everyone's going to understand that decision, but that's how I felt. That for me, I couldn't live knowing that my baby was, you know, out in the world. And so that's, yeah.
Okay, if I can, excuse me. If I could, and again, you don't need to answer this if I'm treading on some attitudes here that are sensitive, but
no, I'm okay. Thanks.
Was that decision then you think easier because you didn't consider what was in your stomach as a baby, and yet once it's born, it is a baby? Does that make a difference?
Yeah, oh, I see what you're saying. I heard a lot of women today say that, oh, they didn't know, you know, they didn't know what was inside of them. But I did feel like I knew.
Okay.
I felt like it was, you know, life or potential life. I really did feel that way. That's why the decision was so incredibly hard. But I still feel like, you know, after the procedure, I knew before and after I had the abortion what it was all about. That it still made the right decision for me.
And as an adult, if I can follow up, at 20, mm-hmm. you certainly had that right. If you were 5 years younger,
mm-hmm.
Do you have any way of anticipating what your feelings might have been then, as opposed to, say, at 20, when you were kind of out on your own anyway?
Well, I think at 15 or 16, I would have felt even less prepared to take care of a child. It is a huge responsibility, you know, just financially, emotionally, in so many ways. Would I have known the significance of being pregnant? It's kind of hard to say. I feel like I knew that no one ever told me. It was just, like, I knew that the baby starts growing inside, you know, at a very...
And I'm not trying to get you there, because I'm not trying to defend or condemn abortion now.
Mm-hmm.
We're still trying to really talk about the parental consent. And my concern is that you indicated a real torment of trying to make this decision at 20, and I'm wondering at 15 if you feel that you would have been capable of making, even if it's the same decision.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Or would you perhaps have wanted the solace of somebody else helping you through this?
I definitely would want someone helping me through it, someone who was non-judgmental, who just supported, you know, and would ultimately let me make the decision because I was the one who had to live with it. And so I think I could have gone to my parents and that they would have been, but I wasn't quite sure where they stood on it, to be honest, you know. And so I didn't tell them even when I was 20, just because I was afraid that they would really try to push me toward one decision or another. But yes, I feel like any girl who gets pregnant in high school needs someone to talk to about it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very scary.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for your candor. That is all I have as far as people wanting to testify. Is there anyone else before we close the public testimony? Hearing none, are there any sites on that, still on, that have anybody there that wants to testify? Hearing none, we will close the public testimony on this bill and discuss it later. Yes. With that, we're adjourned.